We have control.
We have landed.
Welcome to the podcast for empathy and imagination. My name is Aubrey.
And I am Drew Clark.
Welcome to the show. This is episode 39. Which is pretty cool. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, everybody, for taking the time out of your day to listen to the podcast for Empathy and Imagination. Make sure to check us out, youtube.com/empathy and imagination, and visit our Patreon page if you'd like to contribute to such a lovely, lovely podcast. All right.
Ooh, a little extra.
Ooh, I like that. Okay.
All right.
Hey, welcome, everybody.
What do we got?
Yes. Hey, okay. Let's check in. How you
Who's
doing,
home?
Man?
Who's home?
We're home. This cool. is our home.
Checking in?
We're home.
Checking in with me?
I'm checking in with you. How you doing?
Doing pretty good. Doing good, man.
Doing good.
Tried out some new band members this week.
Oh, fun.
The old Giant Electric Spider, which now is probably going to have a new name.
Cool.
I feel like I shouldn't reveal the name because it's not final yet.
Oh, the new band name?
But I do want to get your input on it.
Okay, cool.
But.
Well, how do I give you my feedback without.
I don't know. Without me saying it?
Right.
Maybe it'll be off the air. Anyway.
Okay. Or a later episode.
Maybe it's not a big deal. Yeah, trying out a couple dudes. They're closer to, you know, it's just me and Orville, the guitarist.
Yeah.
So we're just, that's the core of the band. It's like Steely Dan. It's just two of us right now. And trying out other people. And the drummer that we tried out, totally chill. Both guys are cool. I guess the drummer plays with the former lead singer of Yes.
Really?
Yeah. John Anderson.
Huh.
And I was kind of like, huh.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So we had our first practice last night.
Tell me more. What happened?
It was cool. They had learned some of the tunes, so we just ran through a couple tunes, and yeah, I mean, just they're seasoned musicians, so they just picked it up right away.
Nice.
You know, it's funny, man. There's so many musicians in the world.
Oh my gosh.
And there's so many talented musicians. It's like it's just crazy.
They're everywhere.
When you think about it, you know. So that was cool. Doing a lot of hot tubbing. Did some hot tubbing this morning. That was cool for a guy that works at Pixar.
Okay. Is in the East
Bay. Cool dude. He's in Oakland, yeah.
Did you encounter anything weird or interesting today with hot tubbing?
Just leaks that are hidden leaks that are hard to diagnose. It's like, where is this coming from? Just an ambient wetness. No idea where the leak's coming from.
Oh, man. The boss
hates that. It's frustrating.
It's
frustrating.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's sort of my check-in. What I thought. There's something else, but
nothing romantic or anything like that.
I mean, you know, we can get into that off air.
Okay. Ow.
Because we have so many listeners, I don't want to jeopardize my social standing.
Got it. Okay, cool. So it sounds like you're doing pretty good. Is that right?
Yeah, doing pretty good.
Hell yeah.
Doing pretty good.
Hell yeah.
The van is. It seems like this. I feel like. It was making this throbbing sound today.
Oh, the TNC?
Yeah. Like the engine. It's kind of like. Not consistently, only when idling.
Only when idling, not on the freeway?
Yeah.
The freeway was still performing.
And it's
fine.
Very slight, so I'm kind of like, man, I just hope it's not some major.
Just ignore
thing.
It. Just
transmission,
ignore for a while.
Transmission failed. What do we do?
Oh.
Skip. Continue recording.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Weird. So we're live streaming this on YouTube, and we have yet to have it work flawlessly. I guess last week
no,
it
we
worked.
Did. Yeah.
Last week it worked well. How you doing? Ooh, this XLR cable.
Might just be your microphone.
Could be, but yours was acting up too.
Right, but it's going now.
Huh.
So, how you I'm feeling a little better. You know, last couple of check-ins have been pretty bummed about money and stuff, and I quit Hopsy, as right. described.
This last week?
Mm-hmm. I've been spending that time applying for jobs. So yesterday, instead of doing Hopsy, I basically filled out so many applications because so many different companies have their own. You can't just link your LinkedIn account, right?
What's your process? Did you go through Craigslist and
Have a resume local-wise, and submit it? There's Craigslist. There's a few others, too, that bump around, but mostly Craigslist was what I was doing Friday.
Yeah.
And the thing is there are other job sites using Craigslist. So Craigslist is still kind of the hub because they still use Craigslist to add.
Right.
$75.
They have an ad on Craigslist, but also on LocalWise.
Correct.
Yeah.
Or LocalWise runs their Craigslist ad.
Right.
Something like that.
Indeed, too. Indeed.com.
Okay. There's one I can check out.
There's a million.
So I search for jobs under keywords and stuff like craft beer, cannabis, empathy. And so I...
good keywords.
I know, right? So from the top, I took time to apply for a job with Ale Industries for a sales, their sales rep guy.
I like it.
And it would be lucrative, and I'd be great at it, and it'd be really cool, excited about that possibility.
For sales?
Yeah, I would basically take samples around to bars and be like, hey, you want to get on the train?
Didn't Heather do something like that?
She still does. So
she still does.
Yeah.
But not for Sierra?
She does it for Sierra.
Oh, Curtis she still does.
Uh-huh. And Curtis is with... Lake Berryessa, or Berryessa Brewing, sorry. Yeah.
I thought she didn't like it at Sierra.
You know, I think that there are some ups and downs.
She got over the hump of
I don't know. Yeah. I actually haven't talked to Heather in a while. She didn't make it out to the party, so I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah.
But so I applied for some different cannabis jobs, and I applied for like a crisis relief counselor job with a different agency, not the Progress Foundation, but something with a different, it's like an R word. I'm going to have to look it up. But essentially, it's you help. You're a coach for homeless people to pull strings together to get get it going, to kind of get a little traction. You're basically you're there to help homeless folks.
Okay.
Get some traction on getting a roof and a job and stuff.
It's like social worker kind of.
Right, something? But you're like a you're called a coach because they don't pay as much.
Nice.
So that's been feeling good. I've been thinking about my beverage Tej, and I just bottled a batch last night after applying for many jobs, and I heard our neighbor friends doing the jam out sesh, and I brought a bottle down there.
Okay, that's why you have all that info on them on their situation.
Uh huh.
About the radio station.
Uh huh.
We are the podcast for Empathy and Imagination is going to be broadcasting on the Crockett radio station.
95.5.
I'm not sure of the call letters, but if you're in Crockett, California.
Or near. It goes for 20 miles.
Oh, damn.
So we're going to be, the podcast is going to be a regular feature on the radio station.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty.
Just because we're cool.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So
they love the Tej.
Okay.
And this was young. You know, you've had it when it's fresh off the bucket and it's you can still really floral and bright and it's
barely
not quite
legal.
It's barely legal. It's not quite settled in yet.
Yeah.
Well, that's how I gave it to him. It was not carbonated, not even chilled. And I was like, look, this is just the director's cut of brewing. This is just the sample before it gets carbonated in its final round, which will lose a little residual sweetness.
So it's like the first cut.
The first take, but it's, 4 weeks in.
Right, right.
So I brought it down there, and they were really impressed.
Nice.
Everyone liked it a lot. They're like, wow, you got something here. This is really great. You could sell this. And I'm like...
Pretty much everyone says that. That's the reaction everyone says.
Most people have that reaction.
And if you have a product and you get a physical reaction when you present it, you know you got something.
Yeah, thank you.
Like if you have an invention and you tell someone about it, and they're like, oh, let me see. Let me play with it. Mm-hmm. Just think about the iPhone,
Oh my gosh!
Like, hey, I got an iPhone. Oh, let me see. Yeah, that's how you know. How you know it's a good product.
Hell yeah!
Yeah,
thank you.
So
that's
what's the
good.
Next step.
I've got two cases for sale right now. That's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna sell the two cases I made.
How do you?
And I'm gonna use that Skrill.
How do you get away with selling it? Just
basically
word of mouth.
Word of mouth. Yeah, I'm just gonna do friends and family network. So basically, I've had more than a few people go, hey, Drew, how about I take a case and I sort of sell the case and I keep one or two and then...
Right, right.
You know what I mean? Like, so there's sort of a network of distribution, just friends and family. So super small scale, super slow, but all in-house. And like, for example, our neighbors were seemingly interested in that. I know a few other people are too.
Nice. That's
so
good.
My thought is to get those two cases out, make four more cases, get those cases out, make eight more cases, get those cases out.
How many cases?
A batch makes two.
A batch makes two cases.
Two full-on wine cases with 12 750 milliliter bottles each.
Oh, right. So it's like a wine bottle.
Yeah. And they
presented in.
They need to be about $18, but I'm going to do an introductory price of $15.
$18 to make a profit?
$18 for a sustainable sale. If you go online and you look at other, like, mead makers who are making raspberry meads, they start at $24. And they're selling it quite well. So I'm going to go ahead and have a better product for less money and go from there.
How much is it? What is a growler? 40? 32?
They're different sizes. 64 is as big as growlers get.
Feel the work growler?
They have a big one, yeah. 32, 64.
32. I think it's 32.
Is it? Okay. Probably 24.
And that's too. Like, I want to say it's $16.
Is that right?
If you already have the growler. So
right.
It's a competitive price that you got going on.
Yeah, so if I'm and it is some expensive stuff.
Yeah.
So like that's my thought now.
What's the most expensive ingredient? Is it honey?
Honey by far.
Yeah. How much?
Well, maybe the raspberry per ounce is more expensive. I have to do some math, but it's a lot of honey.
So it's four cases.
One 5-gallon batch makes two cases.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how much honey for one batch?
Well, that might be my little secret.
Oh, I see.
But what I am going to do is if you become I think what I want to do
an
is
affiliate?
I'm gonna sell a widget. Yeah, if you become an affiliate, I'm going to send you the video on how to make it. I've already made, actually. So if you want to make it, you can. But I just ask that we pyramid scheme me some of the profits kind of all the way down.
Well, you could also, you could have training. You could have like beer camp. I mean, Gradient Studios.
Gradient Beer Camp.
Yeah, Gradient Beer
Just
Camp.
How to make Tej or other beers.
How to make Tej, other beers, home brewing tutorial.
I mean,
you know,
we just need some more gear. I've got the knowledge.
Yeah. You'd need like student brewing gear, sort of.
I would need to invest about $2,000 into brew gear.
Yeah.
And then I would need some like student tools. I could probably fit it in with $2,000. So, yeah, that's been on my mind.
Cool.
Yeah, that's my mind. That's been feeling good. It's been thinking good. So, yeah, that's my check-in.
Nice. Thank you. Check-in.
Bing!
Who's home? Anybody
All right.
home? You got a topic?
I mean, we got topics. I got topics.
You got topics.
A few different levels of topics.
Ooh.
Okay, we're going to start with... Okay, so this is something it's a topic. You ready?
Yeah, yeah. Bring it on.
What is the gradient between persuasive and manipulative?
Nah.
Now, people talk about motives.
Yeah.
But the thing is, motives and end result sometimes line up, sometimes don't. And when you think about the power of charisma or persuasiveness, and it sort of blends with manipulative, I actually think that they're on one gradient.
Yeah.
And that's a thing to sort of explore.
Because, I mean, wouldn't manipulative be more like you're tricking someone into doing something they don't want to do?
Right.
Whereas persuasion is you're not tricking them. You're just using sort of benign psychology.
I think it's impossible not to include subtle, like, facial expressions and tonal changes to sort of paint a picture, which I think is the fringy beginnings of manipulation. And I think that's inescapable in persuasiveness.
Okay. Do you know Scott Adams?
I don't.
The creator of Dilbert?
No.
He, the guy, Scott Adams, he's creator of Dilbert. So now you know who he is.
What's he like?
Well, he has studied hypnosis, and he's like a sort of a student of persuasion. And he predicted that Trump would win the election. He has all these predictions, and they just keep sort of coming true. And the way he because he bases his predictions on the idea that people aren't motivated by reason, rationality, people are motivated by feelings. And he calls Trump the master persuader. Because he just focuses on feelings. He focuses on feelings. His level of charisma, his level of like linguistic kill shots, quote unquote, in the last election cycle, like having a nickname for each of his competitors,
mm-hmm.
right? Like Lion Ted,
Crooked Hillary.
Crooked Hillary.
Low, some people say
low energy.
Putin made those up. Right?
Low energy Jeb.
Low energy Jeb. So, that's kind of true.
So Scott Adams' theory is that Trump is such a master persuader that these are linguistic kill shots. Once you, because they play into cognitive or into confirmation bias.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, Jeb's so low energy. And then every time you look at Jeb, you're kind of like, yeah, the guy doesn't have that much energy.
It's hard to picture him leading a room of leaders.
Yeah. And you look at, he says Crooked Hillary, and then you look at Hillary and you're kind of like,
what's going on with the emails or whatever?
And so Scott Adams, and he just has these predictions. He's like, yeah, watch. People will call Trump Hitler, and then they'll move to he's a Russian pawn, and then they'll move to like the narrative will go from he's Hitler to he's a Russian pawn to he's incompetent to yeah, he's doing some pretty good things, but we just don't really like him. Which we haven't got to yet, but we've gone all three of those phases we've passed through. We're now at the incompetent phase.
Well, people think that's been the whole time. But
people are just saying, people are just
check. I think it's your crush phone, man.
Check. We're at the phase where everyone's like, yeah, he's incompetent.
Yeah.
And then, but he keeps knocking down all of these accusations. That's what's so funny. So anyway, it's interesting if you read Scott Adams' blog, because he predicts a lot of these sort of the mainstream media's narrative about things. Mm. And it's because he's looking at humans as basically moist robots who aren't motivated by reason. They're motivated and make decisions based on feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my digression there. Thank you. Not really a digression, but a little
he's on
parenthetical.
Board there. Yeah.
And it's true, like, I mean, just think about if you meet, you know, if you go on a date, right? Mm-hmm. They say that you make a decision within the first 30 seconds. It has nothing to do with reason. It's all intuition. Or, like, even buying a car. Mm-hmm. Did you see the white Ram and you were like, that's it?
You know, it was like, I did look at it and then I was like, damn, that's pretty close to what I want. But I'm going to look at some other stuff. And then I was like, yeah.
But it wasn't like, okay, this has all these, here's all the numbers of all these different cars, and I'm going to just totally rational process
I like
comparing
to think
them.
That.
Yeah.
I like to think that I had that going
there
in.
There probably is some of that, but I think mostly it's just gut. Like,
it's like,
it's
this new, has this many dents, and it's this much discounted. Okay, cool. It's like right in there,
yeah.
You know.
But like, it's like 75%. Yeah, I could see myself in that. That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. That matches my teeth or something, yeah. You know.
Or even like your apartment. Did you guys just see this place and you're both like, yep.
Well, it was like, we got
here. Or was it this super long process of weighing pros and cons? And
you know, we went back and forth. We said yes, okay. And then I don't know, and then yes. But mostly, they didn't list that there was a studio, and they didn't list that there was Narnia, the storage thing.
Right.
There's unlisted perks.
The studio's fucking, that's a big perk.
Pretty.
Thank you.
Minty fresh.
Yeah, because without that, we wouldn't be doing this here.
We wouldn't be
doing it. I don't
know
where
we'd
be doing it. Probably
outside somewhere.
Yeah. Be a Miz cast every week.
Not so bad.
Not so bad.
All right, so
cheaper to drink beer in here.
Yes, yeah. So manipulation and persuasiveness. Okay, Aubrey, have you ever found yourself on one or the other end of this, of that gradient in a relationship?
Oh, like an intimate relationship?
Or just or friendship. Have you ever found, what's in a story about where you found yourself?
On the persuasive or manipulative
end of the scale.
I mean, yeah, sure. You put me on the spot.
I'm putting you on the spot.
I don't know if I have specific stories, but yes. And I probably found myself doing some of those things too. Manipulating.
And that's what I'm saying. I'm curious. Yeah.
Like, I don't know, in passive aggressive ways, like, you know, moping to get a response and then that kind of stuff. Not so much in friendships.
Yeah.
That seems like more of a crucible of where you burn off the bullshit emotions more quicker than in intimate relationships. Because intimate relationships is like you kind of, I think you delude yourself more in intimate relationships. So you end up going along with it for longer.
Yeah, I've definitely been guilty of that.
So, yeah, and I mean, you know, I've used persuasion in, you know, even things like dating profile in a benign way. You know, because I'm not lying,
right?
And I'm not tricking anybody, and I'm not like, it's not just a win for me. So it seems like persuasion. The best way to do persuasion is it's a 360 win.
Okay,
to quote AJ. you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas manipulation is more like, you're just pulling the wool over their eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Those are some good. Yeah. Those are some good guidelines and to differentiate.
There's some good books about this sort of thing. There's one. Robert Cialdini is one of the head honchos of persuasion. He has a book called Influence, and he talks about, like, you know, the seven different points of influence. And he just had a new book come out. It's called Persuasion. Which I haven't read yet. But Scott Adams was like, yeah, this is the new Bible of persuasion.
Wow.
Yeah.
Persuasion. Do you have anything on that?
I have nothing on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, some things about in the book Influence, it's like, and again, you can see Trump does all these things with mastery. Thinking past the sale, right? So, for example, Trump, before he's president, he goes on Saturday Night Live. And, you know, when they host Saturday Night Live, you have to approve the skits that you're in, right?
Right.
So one of the skits is like Trump as president, like doing silly
this
stuff.
This is a true story?
Yeah. Trump was on Saturday Night Live, you know, like 2 years ago or something. I mean, Trump was running from president. Saturday Night Live was like, you want to come on? And we'll do this sketch of you as president being silly. And Trump agreed to it. And that's part of it. He plants in your imagination, I'm going to be president.
Because
you're watching him as president.
Oh, dude.
Even though it's making fun of him. He gets it. That's thinking past the sale.
It would be like SNL now is totally making so much money off of him.
Yeah.
So they are all, every time Sean Spicer comes on, they come make fun of what he says.
Right.
With that funny lady.
And it's kind of like all good publicity for him.
It's great sort both directions. Yeah. That's sort of like persuasion because everybody wins there.
That's why Scott Adams says, Trump's the master persuader.
Okay, 1 point for that. I get a point. There's a point there.
And the other thing is like diffusing questions with visual rebuttals. Like, you know, at the debates, the moderator was asking Trump, like, you've said these things about women. You've said women are pigs and all this stuff. And Trump just goes, only Rosie O'Donnell. And the entire audience just cracks up. And he diffused the whole thing. He diffused the entire accusation. It's truly remarkable. I mean, whether he's an idiot or not, I don't know. I don't think he's an idiot. I think he has a high IQ. I think he's a master, truly a master persuader. Whether that, you know, translates to being a good president, I don't know.
We'll see, man. It's still really early.
Yeah.
We'll see.
It's still really early, and it's people are in arms. People are so up in arms, and it's already, it's just so early.
I mean,
not even a year in, not even 200 days in. It's crazy.
I expect craziness like this.
Yeah, but there was none of this backlash with Obama or anything.
No. The right wing, they were dogging on him the whole time, but it wasn't like
they weren't rioting
in the streets. Yeah, it was like they're bad mouthing him on Fox and Breitbart and whatever.
Yeah,
probably also on Salon, which is like an ultra left wing Breitbart.
Oh yeah, it's terrible. Salon's the worst, man.
Yeah, Sam Harris hates Salon.
One of the worst. They're fucking horrible.
I've never actually... Oh, my God. That's super cold. Hey, which reminds me.
Oh, yeah. Looks like our camera's froze. Is that true?
Are we frozen?
They're still switching, but it doesn't seem to be working. Huh. Man, what a bummer.
You want to throw them a restart or something? Good. Good do.
I don't know.
Yeah, we're rolling. Podcast for Empathy and Imagination is working hard every single week to bring you top-notch content and high-quality stuff for absolutely free.
High-quality video and audio sometimes.
It's hard to do. There's a lot of wires, you know. So just thanks for bearing with us.
Yeah, there's a lot of wires, a lot of wireless. Right now I can switch cameras, but they're all frozen. But when I look through the individual cameras, they're not frozen.
Right. You got to like reconnect them in there and then start a new thing probably.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which you can do.
Should I do that?
Do it. Let's do it, man.
So I'm going to stop this.
Cool. So then what I'll do.
And then reconnect the cameras? That's what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll just have a little. Okay. We'll just do it. Get a little of this bit going. You can do it in there. Thank you. There we go. That's been some fun times. And now, here we go. Now it's time to consider your next purchase from Vinyl Corp. Are you ready to make your next purchase from Vinyl Corp? Nothing's connected. Nothing's connected. Isn't it connected? We've got the internet. Why isn't it connected? Why aren't the wires talking to each other? Should we bring it back up? Come on, Wi-Fi. Gradient with a...
Is it plugged in here?
Let's zoom in. No, we'll zoom out a little bit on that guy.
Oh.
So, you know...
Friggin' issues. This just want things to work.
This side, oh, that one works too. You know? Yeah, look at this guy.
I just want things to work. Right. Plug it in and it works.
Right, you know, it's just... There's so many dealy bobs. But at least we have cold beer...
Yeah.
And I think it's just about time for my favorite medicine.
Sure.
Right?
So I'm going to... World problems.
If it's right with you, I'm going to take over the editing swatch for a moment.
Mm. Please do.
Okay. So, yeah. So the topic of persuasion, kind of on the same gradient as manipulation. I think any final thoughts on that one? Ready to move on to the next topic?
Well, have you been victim or perpetrator of manipulation?
Yeah, I think
so.
I mean,
I know persuasion, for sure.
I've definitely persuaded people, and I wonder if...
Any bad stories about manipulation?
I've probably talked to people, like, when I was young, like, late teenager, we were doing a lot of, like, jackass kind of stuff. You know, we were, like, jumping off things and smashing, skateboarding down hills. We were doing, like... Daredevil stuff, and I might have convinced some people we were hanging out with to do things
to do
that
crazy
wouldn't,
shit
yeah, they wouldn't normally,
they
done.
Normally do.
I might have been part of some of that. Yeah. I think I could take responsibility for that.
Yeah.
You know, that's probably it, though. No, I'm just kidding. I definitely have played the Wambulance card in romantic relationships, like acted or was upset and sort of used my upsetness to coerce a certain reaction. But it's only because I saw that happening, and that's what I learned to use as a tool.
Mm. You mean you saw that happening, that someone else doing that, and you, that's how you learned it?
Right.
Learned it by watching you, kind of thing?
Yeah, totally. So,
yeah.
I mean, definitely I've been on the receiving end, the giving end of,
I think most people,
different kinds of persuasion, you know.
Most people do that.
Mm-hmm. Is this going to be
relationships? Yeah, you know, because it's so emotionally weighted. It's such an emotionally charged thing.
Yeah.
Romantic relationships.
Oh my gosh, dude. It's deep.
It's like all feeling.
Pinging feelings.
It's not a lot of logic going on.
So that's the end of that topic then?
Cool.
So let's close out that topic with a little bit of sound.
Okay.
Okay, the topic has been closed.
All right.
Next fucking topic, Aubrey. You got a topic?
Sure, I got a topic.
Let's
do
Aubrey's topic.
Let's do. Let's try one thing first here. Let's see here. Let's see if we can get in touch. This topic is called old friends. Let's see if we. Oh, there we go. Okay.
Call. Okay. Cool.
Ooh, there we go. Cool. You never know.
Let's see what happens.
Hello, this is Bill Holm with the Hofstra Institute for Human Genomics. Please leave me a message, and I'll get back to you as soon as possible. Thank you.
At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Hey, Bill, it's your old buddy, Aubrey. Haven't talked to you in years. Give me a call back when you get a chance. Maybe you can run my DNA as well. Thank you. Bye.
Nice.
Okay. Well, we haven't had much luck with the calls.
You want to try one more? Or are you feeling, is that the, was he the
that
main
was
guy?
The one. I tried to line him up earlier. All right. Maybe he'll call back. We'll see.
Okay. Cool.
I thought, you know, there's all these heavy topics recently in this show. All this political stuff, all these controversies, you know?
Yeah.
Shit. I thought we'd make it a little light.
Let's lighten it up, bro.
How about Star Trek?
Oh, I love Star Trek.
Pretty good topic.
Oh, my gosh.
Would you consider yourself a Trekkie?
Why not? I would consider myself a TNG Trekkie.
Yeah, specifically TNG.
Specifically TNG. I don't like the old...
The original series?
It does things for...
Don't like
our culture.
Fully don't like it.
It does things for a culture that I appreciate.
Hate it.
But there is nothing... that can top TNG and that crew, because they had a crew where they made a TV show not about the problems in between the crew, but about the things they would encounter in space. Every other Star Trek show is about their social problems.
Like a soap opera-ishness.
Yeah.
It's true. That's kind of true. The original Star Trek did establish the triumvirate of Kirk, Spock, Bones.
Yeah.
They didn't always get along, because mainly there was a rivalry between
Bones
and Spock. But a lot of times it was sort of a loving rivalry, right? But that's true. I think that's true. The original Star Trek was much more like Kirk is a maverick, right? And he gets shit done on his own terms in his own good time. Whereas TNG was more like, yeah, we got to work together. Everyone has different skills, and our skills work well together. It's all about collaboration, teamwork. Well,
yeah, how do we get it done?
Yeah, it's true. So you're more of a fan of TNG, which means Star Trek Next Generation, right?
I've probably watched every single episode in a row like three times, like from beginning to end of all seasons. Plus, I watched it as a kid with my dad.
Okay. Yeah, I remember it ended at, as a kid, I remember it, I think our bedtime was 9 p.m., and that show ended at 9. So it was like sweet, you know, it was kind of a sweet experience to watch it, because once the episode was over, you knew you had to go time for bed kind of thing.
That's a nice marker for the end of you know, daytime. Get some TNG in you, a nice little metaphor about how to treat each other well, and then sleepy sleep.
Yeah, and there is sort of inter-crew strife in TNG, although it's less of it than in the original series.
They usually have to add new characters for strife.
Also, the original series was only like 2.5 seasons, whereas TNG was 7. So I have some archetypes from TNG, because that's my favorite Star Trek.
TNG?
Yeah. I mean, you have Star Trek, the original series. You have the animated series, which was actually pretty cool. And then there was Next Generation, and then Deep Space Nine, then Voyager, then fucking Enterprise and Andromeda, and then... And then there were the J.J. Abrams lens flare movies, where occasionally a Star Trek would break out. Remember those? No. You didn't see the newer Star Trek? Like the reboot, quote unquote?
With the crew from TNG?
No. I'm good. The reboot of the Kirk.
Oh, J.J. Abrams?
Yeah.
I've seen, I think, 2 out of 3 of those.
Okay. Yeah, it's
they're
like
pretty good action movies.
It's like a lens flare reel where there are occasional glimpses of a Star Trek crew. That's a joke.
Okay, because it's so explosive. Like
there's all this extra lens flare. Do you know what that is?
When they have the circles cross the screen. Yeah. I do that.
I make movies.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's not real. It's like digital lens flare.
Boring.
Fake.
Get the real sun
added in. Yeah. Mm. Distracting after a while. So anyway, TNG. I have some archetypes I came up with, and I was wondering if you had any input on this. So
yes,
man, hard to get through this topic.
Sorry.
The 7 sort of main characters, right? So for each of these characters, I have a sort of archetype, or like what their main trait is. Let's put it that way. So Data, innocence. Geordi, insecurity. Worf, aggression. Dr. Crusher, wisdom. Troy, intuition, or empathy, I guess you could say. Riker, confidence, and Picard, discipline.
Ooh, dude, I love that list. Did you come up with that?
Yeah. Because that's why the show works so well, is because they all have their own stat, you know? It's like a D&D character sheet, and each one is one of the scores. Riker's confidence, right? It's kind of Riker's like the new Kirk. He's like the new Kirk.
He is. He takes Kirk's place.
Yeah.
Because he's...
He's brash. Romantic, he's talented. He's the ladies' man, although Picard, in his own way, is a ladies' man.
But he denies it.
Yeah. He goes for the really brainy
brunettes
chicks.
Is like his thing.
Whereas Riker's just floundering all the time.
He's like, whatever blue girl jumps on me, whatever.
Yeah. Picard's discipline, right? He's just all about playing it close to the chest and not revealing too much about himself.
He expresses good parts of discipline.
Yes. Yeah.
And he breaks discipline's rules when appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a great leader archetype in that way, where he breaks his own damn rules.
He's very principled.
Uh-huh. Yeah. He, like, the prime directive, how many times did he break it in his career? Like, there's an episode
and it's always
they go, like, hey, how many times you've broken the prime directive? 6 times in the last 3
right,
years.
Right. They're coming up with reasons to, like,
indict him and
fire
shit.
Him. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, but it's because if his orders conflict with his principles, he doesn't follow orders.
And that's integrity.
So it's kind of like Kirk from the original series. Kirk is split into two. in the Next Generation.
I didn't think, I've never thought of it that way before. It's kind of like,
it's kind of like 60-40 though. Like 60% is Riker and like 40% in Picard.
And Picard's like 60% a different character.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he's more sort of, you know, he's got sort of the more uptight British thing going on.
It's like theater. Though, he's good at theater.
Even though he's, I guess, technically French.
Yeah, Jean-Luc Picard. But he was, you know.
And Picard, he's named after an explorer, an actual explorer who exists named Picard.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
In real reality. Troy's intuition, Crusher wisdom. You know, sort of. Worf is definitely aggression. Geordi's like insecurity, though, you know.
What?
When when he's trying to get with chicks,
he's always insecure.
And he's like, I don't know. He knows his computers and he knows his warp cores, but he doesn't know how the chick mind works.
No, right? He has no fucking idea. And he,
remember that episode where
he goofs it a bit,
where he's like psyched to meet that one woman engineer because he had recreated her personality on the holodeck, and then he meets her in real life, and she's a total bitch. Do you remember that one?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And do you remember that they later meet and she apologizes?
That's right. But yes. that episode is like the masturbation episode. Because because he's on the holodeck with his recreated version of her and she walks in on him. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh. At first he's ashamed, but then he's like, wait a second. Yeah, he gets really indignant.
That is a cool switch.
So, yeah.
I can speak to that. It's a good episode. Because I remember it's like that. She thought he was... Having sex with the hologram version of...
Right.
What's her name? We know her name. Leah Brahms.
Leah Brahms, thank you.
So Leah Brahms, she has the mole and the dark hair, mm-hmm. and he's, you know, he's into her. And it's like the story
isn't even about... And she really likes Fungini.
The story isn't even about that it's a multiracial thing. Of course, they're doing that in the 90s, rare.
Sure.
But we don't even think about it because everything. Multi-race is like, that's the past.
Yeah,
because everybody works together, and people are green, blue with crazy lips, and they got to breathe this fog machine in front of them. Sometimes no one blinks an eye.
You know, the beauty of that episode is sort of a metaphor for something like OK Cupid. You look at the profile, you read the words, you're like, oh man, she must be so great. Then you meet her in person, and it's like, eh, or meet him, whatever. Them. But you know what? The persona that you build up in your mind never correlates to the actual person in real life. You know?
Never.
The Leah Brahms that he built up in his mind isn't like the actual Leah Brahms.
And may I say
she's got her own life. She's got other shit going on.
She's married.
She's not just studying fucking warp core schematics all day and night. She's married. She's got a personal life. She does things.
Two things. Two things. On that episode, the computer takes two incredible leaps.
Yes.
One, the computer forgets to tell Geordi that she's married. And right. Of course, there's been never a mistake like that before in the computer. Two, well,
okay,
she's incredibly flirty with Geordi. He's just showing up to do the thing to try to solve the engine problem, and she's all like, Geordi.
Yeah, yeah.
To be fair.
It's also like computers are stupid in a way that human stupidity is like a superset of computer stupidity, right? Computers are stupid because they will do exactly what you tell them to do. Nothing more, nothing less. So if a computer is stupid, it's because the human programming it didn't foresee all these other branches.
Right.
Human stupidity is truly a vast territory without limit. So the computer overlooking the fact that she's married is understandable because that doesn't come up. They're talking about schematics and stuff.
Okay, I can believe that a little bit.
So the computer's not like, oh, I need to tell him he's married because it doesn't know what his motive is. The computer, by the way, is voiced by Gene Roddenberry's wife.
Really?
Yeah. Who was actually acted in the original series. Anyway.
Huh.
And so that's why Geordi is sort of insecurity. He sort of represents insecurity or like the sort of savant nerd, like really good with technology, really good with computers, technical things he's really good at, but he's not good interpreting moist robots and people and stuff.
Yeah.
Huh. Everyone is very integral, though. The whole crew.
Yes. That's what I love about it.
You know, like, they're consistent. Even, like, Geordi with that episode, The Enemy, where season? He gets trapped on a planet with some Romulan.
Oh,
yeah. So Geordi is sort of insecurity. And Data is like the child. Data is the new Spock, right?
Yeah, except he's a superhero, though, now.
But he's also like a child. Baby. He has baby, like a baby mind. Yeah. So he's like Superman, but...
A baby.
Baby.
Yeah, he's only like 30 or 24 years old.
Because he's just like...
In TNG, he's like 24.
Everything is a new experience. You know, he's like totally uncorrupted, very innocent.
Season one, he can barely form a sentence.
Right.
But season five, he's making jokes and acting.
He's kind of braggadocious. In the pilot, he's kind of braggadocious, too.
Yeah, he's like aloof to that he's braggadocious.
Yeah. He's kind of aloof, yeah.
And, I think that...
He's like, I'm stronger and quicker than you. It's simply a fact.
I can kick everyone's ass completely, no problem, you know.
I remember when I first heard like that his name was Data, I was kind of like, I didn't know. I kind of thought it was a dumb name.
You thought like...
But now it just seems totally natural.
You were worried the name was too straightforward?
Or just not cool enough. Like Spock is like, wow, it sounds exotic. Kind of a weird name. You know, Data is like a real thing. It's like a noun. You know,
yeah, real, okay. You know. Okay.
But
in Star Trek, it's funny
if the character's good enough, it doesn't matter. Right?
Was there a character that... you ever, or that you found to be one of the most compelling or attractive characters?
Attractive? Troy. Yeah.
Okay.
Remember in the pilot, she's like wearing the skirt, which you
you
occasionally see. And there's some men wearing skirts
in
a few TNG episodes.
Super short skirts.
But I remember watching the pilot and being like, nice. I'm into this show because she's wearing a skirt the whole time. But then that was the only time ever in the whole series that she wore the skirt uniform, Troy. So it was kind of a letdown because she doesn't wear a skirt.
No,
ever
I
again.
Think she did like an episode 3, season 1, one more time. I think,
like the uniform
she
skirt.
She wore the mini skirt uniform again. I thought it was one more time with the like push up. Yeah,
the push up thing's nice. Yeah.
Of course, she's empath. She's like the warm and welcome one. She, of course,
hot.
She's like this attractive, like Mediterranean.
So in terms of
woman.
Attractiveness, instantly, Troy.
Troy. Yeah.
Yar, no thanks. Crusher, no. Nah. She
Crusher's
sort of gets
too mommy.
She sort of gets hotter.
Yeah, her hair's better.
Her
later.
Hair gets better.
I like when it's the straight hair that's about this length. It's just like straight.
Right.
If it's all if it's all over the place,
it looks
like,
kind of weird. Yeah.
It's too much. But it was like 93, you know.
Yeah. No, it was like 89, dude.
When it started.
Yeah, when it started.
But she was having crazy hair all the way into 94. You know?
Yeah, and it's weird because she looked worse in the pilot than she did at any other point. But in terms of, so that's attractiveness, Troy. In terms of like badassness. Picard. I was always a Picard guy.
Dude, he's wicked.
Like Riker was cool, but I was kind of like, you know, I'm not like tall. I'm not like a tall guy.
Not like a tall, broad-shouldered guy,
like a tall,
guy, right?
Extrovert ladies' man. That's not really my bag.
Honorful, talented, plays the sax.
Is
like
a
diplomat,
true.
You know?
That's true.
He's like pretty
jazz guy.
Cool. He could play the drums if he had to. I think if he sat down at a kid, I think he could pull it off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You kind
of. I sort of
feeling.
Related to Picard a little more. Of course, yeah. I had hair then, but still, I just was like, I don't know, something about him. You would think it would be Geordi, like some kind of computer nerd that I
identified with,
but it wasn't. What about you?
You know,
like Worf.
I definitely was like, when I think about TNG,
Worf
it's
for
inevitable.
Attractiveness.
Oh, absolutely, dude! His fucking forehead.
Yeah,
it's inevitable that I assign myself to characters, and it really became like, okay, well, which ones do I see in me the most? Because I think I see all of them in me, because you said it well, they're archetypes.
Right, exactly.
Some is always there.
They're all, that's and why I'm, the show works.
You know, and I could say, like, I'm less Worf. I'm not actually, in my internal psyche, very Worf-like.
You're right. Each one of us has, each one of us is a multitude, right?
Right, and there's like a top three in
just
my
just like
opinion.
That episode, right? Where he gets the that pottery sculpture from his old teacher, and he's like, they believe that there are inside each one of us is a multitude of people.
Oh, yeah. It was like a gift from somebody or something.
Yeah. The chase.
Oh, my God. See, I don't have the names memorized, because I would just burn through three a night.
Right,
and then go to bed and do it again the next day, you know?
Yeah, I think it's just because I've seen them so many times.
Oh, my gosh.
But, yeah, okay, so attractiveness. Were you more of a Yar?
You know, okay, let's see. I think
Troy? Crusher?
Yar, yeah, Yar was pretty attractive. Troy, definitely. Yar and Troy. Not Crusher. Crusher's always been mom.
Yeah.
She's always been mom. You know, there's not... I mean, there's definitely... You could see her beauty, but her energy's more mother healer to me.
Yeah.
Troy's more like... Okay, so when I think about myself and the characters, there's like probably the top two or three is like... Top two is Troy and Picard.
Right.
Those, to me,
empathy,
those are
and
what I... And
empathy
leadership.
And discipline. Yeah. Empathy and leadership.
And so, like, I really... Those are the ones that mix most, but then right behind them is probably Riker.
Uh-huh.
As far as the way he would explore and, like, just do whatever to get it done.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so that's kind of my, I guess, hierarchy of... Troy and Picard are probably equal.
What about character... What about, like, guest...
Oh, my gosh.
Characters that weren't part of the main cast.
Well, Q is
okay.
Is a powerful thing that was like a surprise to a lot of the Star Trek community.
So you identified with Q a little bit?
No, I don't. I don't know if I identify with him as much as I see it as I see him as a god reflection and culture.
Oh yeah, I think I identify with Q. It's like sort of a prankster,
but he's all
trickster.
Powerful. He can even kick Data's ass, which is like unheard of.
Well, yeah, just the trickster part. I identify with that, not the god part. But the kind of rascal.
And you know, there's the time traveler. You remember the time traveler?
Yeah.
And he had the hands that were...
Right.
I mean, his hands were kind of more like this, and he had like a large forehead.
Yeah.
And he
was saying Wesley Crusher is like a Mozart type character.
And then Wesley Crusher joined
the
fucking collective.
And then he comes back, though, eventually, in a season 7 episode. But yes,
he like comes back once, I think. But like, you know, he joins the collective. Like what?
Yeah.
Like Wesley Crusher is the fucking chosen one. Like also,
yeah.
That was kind of like a weird add-on in the story.
That was a little bit of that seemed a little excessive. That seemed like Gene Roddenberry trying to recapture his youth.
But it was like you already told the story of Wesley, you know. But he didn't.
Because Wesley would save the day in so many of the first season.
Oh, because he was like fucking brilliant at solutions, which in a way you think about like Anakin Skywalker could drive the speeders better than anyone, you know, and so.
Yeah, I mean,
it's kind of, there's the chosen one there.
It's
but
plausible. It became like, come on.
He's trying to mix the chosen one story with the other story, the sun god story, like Star Wars and Lord of the Rings.
That's
like,
true.
He's trying to have both.
That's a good point. It is kind of the hero's journey because Picard becomes his surrogate father, Wesley's surrogate father.
Right, but they do not have a good relationship.
He has to go to the underworld and rescue the father. Dude, I never thought about that. And that's what happens
what are you talking about?
Part of the hero's journey is going to the underworld and rescue... atonement with the father. That's what it's called. Part of the hero's journey, this idea that crops up in many stories throughout time and different human cultures, is the atonement with the father is a part of the story. And that's what Wesley does, man. He does that in... I just realized that. He does that in a bunch of TNG episodes. Ooh, that's cool. Is that live?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. As far as, so I identify with Q a little bit, but Also, I really identify with, remember that episode with the guy who can't speak, but he has like three mm-hmm. people.
Oh yeah, his choir.
And like his choir, and like one is very emotional, one is very
militant, and the other one's like
rational.
One's romantic.
Like I sort of feel like that guy.
Oh, interesting. Okay, how do you identify him?
Again, with the multiplicity of people inside of you, right?
Hmm. Levels.
Like you have your rational self and your sort of passionate self, and sometimes one of them is speaking, sometimes another one of them is speaking.
That's a cool metaphor, and they film that really well.
That's a cool episode.
That's good theater. Like they really got it. Like the timing, the angles, the audio. They get across the like punctuation of things, and it's like not only is the story such an excellent way to express how we might feel, they fucking made it look believable.
Yeah.
Enough for 1990, you know, it's like it was believable enough.
Yeah.
And they kicked so much ass at it. I mean, I really think that's like the TNG, the whole seven seasons is going to go down as one of history's like ultimate contributions to art.
It's like the one show I can just watch.
Oh, just forever. Constantly. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is. Pretty sweet. Did you ever get into the other Star Treks?
Mm-hmm. I've definitely...
Space Nine, Voyager.
Voyager, I watched like the first four episodes and gave up. Enterprise with, what's his name? They're like Duck Mirgerbau or whatever. I don't
remember. Enterprise. Scott Bakula?
I think that's the name.
I like the actor.
Quantum Leap guy?
Yeah.
So I've seen most of that series. With Tuck and everything. It's interesting because I've seen most of it. It's like they're the first major kind of ship.
It's pre-TOS. Yeah, it's pre-TOS.
It's the first in Enterprise.
TOS is the original series.
It's like they spoke of this ship in all stories.
It's a prequel.
It is a prequel.
Yeah.
They spoke of this ship in many of the tales.
Already skeptical.
Yeah, right? So they have this captain and they encounter, like, it's a lot more mechanical problems with the ship, you know? But the ship doesn't really have a character. They don't ever go in and make the ship a character. They sort of just make it this, like, entity. Like, in TNG, they make the ship a character. She breathes. There's always sound. There's this, like, heartbeat you can feel. And when something goes wrong with her, like, you can feel it. It's like, the shields are
sort
down.
Of has a personality of her own.
She's a character.
Yeah.
And so they don't really do that with the other Star Treks so much.
Don't they meet the Vulcans for the first time?
Yeah,
that's kind of cool.
They introduce a major thing.
That's a cool opportunity to have.
Because we love the story of Star Trek. We care about the historiosity of it. So that's cool because of that. But it's like the show isn't that good.
Yeah.
It's like pretty boring because it's like the crew's all fighting with each other. That's most of what the show is they yell at each other. And I'm like, this is not what I want to watch.
Yeah.
And that's why I couldn't watch. I started watching, was it the one where they got
Deep Space Nine?
No, was it Voyager when they were transported to the crazy distance and they're trying to make their way
Voyager.
Home?
Voyager. Yeah.
All they are doing
that's
is fighting with
each feminist other. The feminist Star Trek.
Because she's the lady captain.
Yeah.
All they do is fight with each other. I couldn't watch it. It's like I watched like four episodes. And I was like, are they going to ever just get their shit together and work out their...
Yeah.
Where's Troy going, like, everybody?
Chill
seriously, bro.
Everybody, like, calm down.
Chill.
Calm down.
What are the problems? Let's organize it. Like,
you know,
it's not just you versus them.
What I heard was, like, the reason that series was geared more towards females, and that's why there was more sort of inter-crew drama. That it was more soap opera-ish.
That they want that or something?
Particularly for that reason.
That ladies would want that? Ugh.
I don't know.
Well, you're supposed to know, man.
I don't want that. I want TNG integral characters working together to solve a problem that sometimes doesn't have a great answer. Like some kind of moral quandary where it's like, I don't know. This seemed like a good decision. I'm not sure which one's better, you know? That's so much of TNG is that. Huh. And that's what I love. Hmm. Setting up some kind of moral decision and just being like, well, that's what we did.
Because you got to.
You got to make some decision. Can't just not make a decision. You know, like
yeah, that's something really relieving about that show.
Sometimes there's a clear cut. This was the best thing to do. This is the worst. But the best episodes are the ones where it's ambiguous. Mm-hmm. What would have happened if we had not done that? Or what would have happened if we had done this? Maybe it would have been better. I don't know. It just sort of ends on like a pensive note, you know?
Should you have let the alien a space creature suck energy off the Enterprise?
Right, right, right.
Like, should you have done that and then that was the Geordi traveled with her to the land of asteroids where her kin are, right?
Right.
So you, like, killed this thing's parent and then saved the baby.
Right.
Yeah, with lasers.
Or should you, like, have somehow shocked Picard awake for the 10 minutes that he was living this full lifetime?
Oh, on the...
Would it have been better to wake him up so he'd never experienced that whole lifetime? Or was it better that he did live through that whole lifetime and experienced all this loss and shit?
The only we have to the way to find that out is to interview him in an old age, right?
Right.
And I don't know if we can do that.
That was one of the. I think that's the fan favorite episode.
Really?
Yeah, I think like some survey somewhere that was the tops episode. That was the episode everyone liked. And it's a fucking great episode, you know. I'm just leaving it on the two.
Cool.
The split view.
Cool.
It's kind of cool. Do you have a personal favorite episode?
Oh my gosh.
Right?
You know, they speak.
It's like 7 times 22.
24 sometimes? I don't know. Yeah,
150 episodes.
I mean, they did it for so long. It's pretty, most of it's pretty amazing. There's a little bit, sometimes some dips, but.
It's hard to pick a favorite.
Yeah.
I do like Captain's Holiday.
Oh, when
he goes on vacation, but he can't help himself. He gets embroiled in this sort of adventure
mystery.
I do like that one just because
totally Picard.
Just because I do like the book. Well, that's another thing, where they have episodes that are majority one character. You know, like there's tons of Picard episodes, like Picard only, and then it sort of goes down. Like there's a lot of Riker episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Late in the season, we get a bunch of Worf episodes, and there's a few Troy and Crusher episodes. Like there's that Crusher episode where she returns to Earth in Ireland, and
Scotland.
There's that ghost in Scotland.
It wasn't Earth; it was second Earth.
And there's that like extraterrestrial ghost thing haunting her. Remember that?
Yeah, that's like a mystery.
It's called
the candle was
Sub Rosa. Is the name of the episode.
Okay.
That was like a. That was like a Crusher episode. And there weren't many of those where it's like pretty much her the whole time. You know, Riker's taking a sick day. Picard's taking a day off. And they just film a whole episode with Crusher. The other Crusher one I can think of off the top of my head is the Remember Me one, which I love, where the crew of the Enterprise keeps shrinking. And eventually it's just Crusher and Picard. And she's like, doesn't it strike you as strange? It's just you and me on this giant ship cruising through the galaxy. Like, where's everyone else? And he's like, well, I'll investigate it for you. And then she's like, I might not have much time, Jean-Luc. I just wanted to tell you something. And she sort of looks away for a second and then looks back and Picard's gone too.
Huh.
Remember that one?
Hmm. I think so.
She steps through this wormhole that Wesley is fucking with in engineering, and she goes into this alternate reality where the crew of the Enterprise keeps shrinking so that eventually it's just her and Picard
and
on the bridge.
And he's like, of course, we've just been alone together. Of course, why would we need a crew here?
It's just been you and me the whole time. Yeah, that's another Crusher
episode.
She
was stuck in the thing and then she had to get out. Oh, yeah. And it was like the blue flashes kept flying by her and she was like trying to get away from them, but it was like them trying to help her from the other side of the dimension or whatever the fuck. Quantum physics.
So I do like that they have sort of, you know, they have episodes that are focused on one of the characters. And of course, Picard has more than the others, but
yeah,
it's a cool thing. It is hard to pick a favorite episode.
Yeah, I don't know. It's my favorite series, you know?
Yeah.
It's like if you were to try to talk about like a perfect album or a perfect series, it's definitely a contender.
Yeah. Some good two-parters.
Yeah.
The one where Picard's tortured.
Ugh.
There are four lights.
Yeah. The four lights.
And at the very end, he's talking to Troy in his quarters or in the ready room, whatever. And he's like, you know, at the end there, I actually saw five lights. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, I cracked.
Yeah. Yeah. But he kept saying four lights because he knew, rationally, he knew there were four, but he actually saw five. Yeah, that's good.
Strong will.
It's good shit.
Strong will. Yeah, man.
So that's Star Trek. Oh, a couple things about the original series. So Gene Roddenberry, the inventor of Star Trek, he was in the Navy, and the old Navy term for a ship doctor was bones. Specifically, sawbones, because they were the ones, if you had an infection in your leg, they were the ones that had to cut your leg off.
Sawbones.
So if you read, like, you know, Moby Dick, they actually use that term, sawbones. So it's a truncation of sawbones.
That's a terrible name.
Sawbones. So that's why he's named Bones in the series.
Okay.
Of course, Crusher isn't called Bones.
Right.
But I guess in the original series, Spock is sort of the rational mind. Kirk is like the instinct, and Bones is the wisdom. Hmm. If you haven't seen it,
I've seen some of it, you know?
Yeah.
I definitely have.
The other thing is they mine Shakespeare a lot.
The original series?
The original series, for sure, and TNG, big time.
Mm-hmm.
The original series, definitely. Like, there are plot lines that are straight out of Shakespeare. The Conscience of the King is one episode that comes to mind.
Hmm.
But yeah, in TNG, basically, Picard is teaching Data how to be an actor.
Mm-hmm.
I love the levels of irony on that.
Yeah.
Because Data is not human.
Right.
But he's becoming a great actor, you know, trying to be an actor, trying to act like a human. And then there's that episode. Let's see what we got.
Today's Sounds Good is going to be a larger portion.
This was something I was trying to get this guy on the show. This is the guy who is the leaseholder for our studio space at Oakland Music Complex. Cool guy. Used to be in the band Placebo. And they have a song on the Cruel Intentions soundtrack, of all things. And it's funny, he was telling me, like, he was just living off the royalties.
Really? From the movie?
From their first album. Like, he was in the band for the first album. Band's still around, still doing stuff. He gets a quarter of the writing credits, quarter of the proceeds from the first album. And he does, like, I guess sound design? He, like, writes these little sort of jingles for companies. Like, he's done hundreds of Google videos. Just like tutorial videos where he does incidental music.
Oh, my gosh.
So I'm trying to... this is it's just going to sound like an ad, but basically he did the music for this ad, which is a Levi's ad.
Okay.
Thought it might be fun to...
Yeah, let's do it.
...to see what this is all about. So, like, that guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Wow.
Right? Imagine having that job.
Dude, that is, that's like a dream position.
You know, he's so jaded with
he's,
it.
He's easy.
Yeah.
Oh.
But he doesn't want to be in a band. He's sick of bands.
Why does he have the rehearsal space?
He plays drums there like almost every day. He's there for a few hours just playing drums. He's got a new kit, too. He got like a tiny little bebop kit.
Hmm.
The bass drum, it's like the size of a floor tom, you know?
Okay. Huh.
Yeah, cool dude. But imagine having that job, just like...
That would be...
Coming up with...
Just... Oh, my God.
Music for ads.
I mean, I could... I do that already. I pump out stuff all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, is it great? I don't know.
I don't know. But he was saying, like, yeah, Google's just kind of like, cool. Like, there's no back and forth. There's no, like... Can you do that again? Can you do that again? Can you do that again? It's just like, nice.
Huh.
Accepted. I thought that was pretty cool. All right, what do you got? That was mine. Sounds good.
Okay, thank you. That's like a very dreamy thing to think about. It's yes, jobs like that existing are just something special.
Yeah, just the fact that that job exists. Yeah.
Okay. So this is another sounds good. I'm just going to say the word sizzle reel.
Yeah, you like that word? That one word? Sizzle reel, one word. All right, let's hear it. pretty good.
Thank you. Thank you. So that's the that's this new band, Tad. That's their sizzle reel.
It's pretty good transitions there.
Thank you.
Is that, is that a video you're playing? Or is it
it's just audio.
Yeah.
Yeah. Damn. Thanks. Yeah, I like editing things, you know. It's good. Good fun.
Yeah. Ah, nice.
Okay. So, yeah, I know some of that isn't real.
Some of that's not, like, you know, 15 minutes of 15 it's not real, but it's so mostly real.
Yeah, okay. So I do have some more topics if you've got the strength.
You want to do more topics? You want to save your topics?
Either way, I could go either way.
Okay. Okay. Is it a topical topic? Like, it's going to expire?
You know,
it'll expire next week.
No, well, no. Well, no. No.
I'm down for doing another topic.
Okay. So we're going to bring you the final topic of the day. And it is pertinent and bear with me. So So what is it like to be acknowledged from a character from another play? By that I mean I'm interested in talking about multi-species relationships.
Hmm.
What does it feel like to be acknowledged from a character from another play?
Right.
Approval from humans usually comes from a lot of successful talking. Animals choose to team with you for other reasons.
Dogs.
It's a cool reminder that community is the 80% and competition is the 20%.
I like that.
Yeah. So.
So how do dogs acknowledge you? Wagging of the tail.
Well, I have a clip. Ready for the clip?
Yeah, yeah.
Here. I'm gonna push the clip. We're gonna do the clip. Okay. Here, check it out. It was this morning. We're just sitting there. Ziggy. She was like, "Hey, you're super cool. Let's hang out." And it was. This is like this is an example of an affirmation of
face
connection.
Looking.
You know, connection through beyond species level, and it's like it's tactile. Yeah. And then you know this is just another little thing of you know something cool.
It's like there. Face.
It's how they show it to each other. You know.
Face mushing.
Right. See, this is like. This is their play dance. It's practice for
and
hunting.
They acknowledge each other. They get all up all in the butthole, mm-hmm. sniffing the butthole.
And see, this is the Inferno and Ziggy.
But it's basically face, neck, right?
Mm-hmm. A lot of face, neck, nibbling. You know, a lot of nibbling.
That's how they acknowledge you, licking your face, mm-hmm. nuzzling up against your face.
So we have these acknowledgments. From other species that aren't speech. And multi-species relationships are a connection to the fact that we're part of this ecosystem. Like we're on a giant compost heap. We're an experiment on a compost heap. And so, yeah.
It's compost like, heap that's constantly overflowing with murder and birth.
Yeah.
You know, death and birth.
And sex.
Let's say just murder, but so how do you know friends have the handshake, the hug, mm-hmm. if they're okay with their platonic male relationships,
mm-hmm.
intimate relationships? It's always it's always face rubbing,
mm-hmm.
cats, even they mm-hmm. rub there, but they have little glands there. I guess we do too. So they're rubbing like oil from their face onto the furniture. But it seems like some animals don't acknowledge us at all. I mean, chickens.
People have pet chickens.
They don't like look in their eyes and feel like they have some understanding.
No.
A dog is very, very much seems like just an arm stretch away to like understanding who they are.
Hmm.
Whereas a chicken is like, You can't cross that fucking chasm. You know, there has been actually...
They're like reptilian.
Yeah. Just a peanut brain. We have communicated with other species in words. Remember that gorilla Coco learned sign language? Dude, that's like first contact. That's like TNG going to a new planet and discovering a new species.
Totally.
And figuring out their language and talking to them. It's funny how that's underplayed. That seems so miraculous. That a gorilla can be like, yeah, I don't feel good.
Where's my friend?
Like there's some level of conscious awareness.
It's pretty cool.
Like a self-awareness. It's aware of itself.
Yeah. It's consciousness.
Yeah. It's cool. Pretty fucked. I don't know if dogs have that. They seem to be aware, but are they?
It's like levels, you know. Yeah. There's intricate levels, I think. And our relationships can vary in depth. Like my relationship with my snake.
Right.
Is not very deep to her.
Right.
She doesn't care. She doesn't have the hardware. But like
exactly.
But with the dogs it's much deeper.
Yeah.
And there's just sort of like that, just noticing that I think is pretty handy.
And that's like man's best friend, right? That's probably why where that came from.
Yeah.
They seem to be they've made this pact. You know, there's almost an alliance between humans and dogs.
There totally is.
Like, yeah, we're just in this together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, existence. Here we go. Ready? It seems like with no other animals, is that the case? Horses are like the chickens of fucking. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's just nobody home.
You know, some people claim there's somebody home and there are horse whisperers and people have horses as pets. I've had a pet horse. The thing is, there's still like nobody there. Nobody. It's just not like a dog, far away.
Imagine if you could have the horse body and obedience, but with a dog, maybe you can't have those two things. But yeah, you look in a horse's eyes and it's like looking in a chicken eye. There's just nothing. Nobody's home. $1,000 aircraft with a 10-cent control tower.
The horse body is so magnificent.
Yeah.
They can do so much. And they're so cool and beautiful fast.
The trade-off was that the brain is just...
Nothing. Yeah, I mean, you look in their eyes, it's not nothing, but it's really far back there. But like, you know, my dog Loki, he looks at me and he's like, he can express some emotion with his eyes or I perceive it.
Right.
And it seems to line up with his behavior and needs. So it's like.
Yeah, they seem to defer to you. They're dependent. They acknowledge, you know, they know that it's you. Whereas a horse is just kind of like. This fucking Michael Myers. This Jason Voorhees of mammals. So I think there maybe it would be cool if there was like a hierarchical neuroanatomy of all animals.
See, that makes sense.
Mapped to sort of empathy.
Hmm.
So like dogs would be at the top, you know?
Hmm.
They have a kick-ass, you know, they have the brain structure, the nervous system. But they also seem to be a little bit empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
Dogs are definitely at the top, the alliance of human beings.
Yeah.
And then like cats would be down there too somewhere.
But they're still on the scale.
Horses. Yeah. And then just like untamable animals would be at the bottom.
Hmm.
Lobster. Like, I can't empathize with this thing. Can't like identify. It doesn't seem to have a personality.
You know?
Insects.
Yeah. Insects, crab.
Yep.
Fish in general.
Yep. Yeah, fish are like the chicken in the sea. But all sea animals seem to have that blankness.
But dolphins, though, they seem to have emotion.
the exception of
whales.
Dolphins.
Killer whales.
Whales look pretty dumb, though, too.
Killer whales have an dolphins extensive thing.
Dolphins are like the dogs of the ocean.
Hmm.
So you have like a scuba gear for you and your dog, and you ride around under the ocean on a dolphin.
So I think that's
like
a show.
It's like the mega conjunction of all the three smartest
dolphin, dog, human
empathetic animals.
Underwater adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. That's interesting with the seasteading, like actually growing dolphins, cultivating a dolphin team. So you have like your seastead, right? You're living at sea and you basically raise dolphins and they're like your SEAL Team 6. They're your Delta Force. You know, mm-hmm. super highly trained, mm-hmm. loyal. They have kick-ass skills.
That was a show. They had that on the show.
Yeah. What was it? SeaQuest?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was only one dolphin, though. I'm saying you have a whole fleet.
I thought they had a fleet at a time.
Did they?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, never mind then.
The idea done, Aubrey. Over.
Can't okay, so can't have that idea now because it already happened on a fictional show that went off the air.
So multi-species relationships.
I like that topic. Interspecies empathy.
Yes, multi-species relationships. Thank you. Okay.
I'm just going to try something.
Okay, do it.
But this doesn't
make any sense. Sometimes.
It's all right, go ahead.
Okay, no, that's it. Well, I mean, what I got, you know, this is it. Sort of trail us out. So. There we go. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the podcast for Empathy and Imagination. My name is Drew Clark.
My name is Aubrey Cloutier.
And this is the podcast where we try to empathize with, connect with questions and ideas, our guests and each other. We make music. We make video. We do content. We would so much love for if the way that you would like to contribute to such a plan was to contribute dollars, then we would love for you to do so through our Patreon, Empathy and Imagination Patreon. If not, that's totally cool. Please keep enjoying our content for free. That's also totally cool. Thank you.
Good at driving. I have a real problem picking lanes and making decisions. I do have my license technically, but I really shouldn't have my license because I'm not a very good driver. However, I am a very bad driver, and I just wanted to let you know that I'm here. I'll always be here. Driving poorly, you can rely on me to be driving poorly. Okay, thank you. Bye.
Idea anyway.
Rhythm section.
Ooh, bass so smooth. Oh.